Hello, 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 hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
It's time to visit our old friend Phil Cormer.
How's he been, I wonder? He's certainly been on the Cormers, hasn't he? If I know Phil.
So today's Film Corner is a special one. Because you've got a small auxiliary corner. Imagine a corner, okay? You're in the lobby of a cinema.
Yeah.
You go into the corner of it.
Yeah. There's a Muller fruit corner.
Well, it's for every corner's a Muller fruit corner for Ben, because he's got a pocket full of yogurt and a pocket full of small sort of sprinkles.
Compote.
Sprinkles or compote. Ben, and when we say get in the corner, we don't just mean stand near the corner. We mean get your head in that corner, on your knees.
Yeah.
That's how it should feel anyway during Film Corner.
Yep.
It should feel like you've met three boring fucks who don't know much about film but are insisting on talking to you about it.
The only place to hide is inside a tricorn hat that's been wedged in the corner of the room.
And you're hoping that if you wedge your head into the tricorn hat and close your eyes and concentrate really hard, you'll reappear during the Napoleonic Wars. Getting absolutely peppered with ye olde ordnance, and it'd be more fun than chatting to those three dicks. That's how we think of it. So Ben, you're saying a corner. Can you imagine a corner having a corner?
Well, yeah, because there's like a small auxiliary corner that's coming off this main corner for today's corner. Yeah. So I don't know how I'm imagining that, really.
Well, in a way, it's a cube, isn't it? Because if you attach two corners together, you sort of get a cube.
I see what you mean.
Or it could be, sort of cushioning, sort of a corner covering, for example, to protect a precious table.
Oh, one of those little rubber things that you stick on the...
Or if you've got
isn't that to protect the head of a? Isn't that to protect the head of a child?
Yeah.
Oh, so Mike, this is interesting. So for Film Corner, were you imagining a corner that juts out, that the listener is being sort of forced onto, like a sort of...
I'd actually been imagining more of a sort of satellite corner.
What's that mean?
So there's a full corner, and there's another corner that's broken off from something else, and it's orbiting the main corner.
Okay. But when you think of Film Corner...
You might not have long to live.
When you think of Film Corner in the abstract, though, Mike, what kind of corner are you imagining? Are you a corner you go into, or a corner that's poking out into you, or the listener?
It's a corner upon which we gather.
Okay.
With a steep, steep precipice.
Interesting.
So this is a cliff edge,
basically. Yeah.
Exactly.
And we gather. We go as close to the edge as we dare.
Oh yeah.
Of film critique.
It's true.
And sometimes we topple over. Sometimes we stay steady.
Anyway, this Film Corner is, and you've been calling out for it, the Double Megan Special.
It's the Double Megan Special.
It's Double Megan.
Yeah.
So the film we're going to do is called Megan. We've watched that.
Megan, I believe, spelt M3. G-A-N, is
that
correct?
Right. Yeah.
Is that correct?
It is, and they explain the acronym in the film, and I've forgotten. But it's quite good. It was a decent explanation.
It was decent, yeah.
It was something like something third generation...
girl Android node.
Something like that.
Mega third generation Android node.
No, but it was better than that.
Better than that?
It was mega third generation... It's applied... neurophysics or something. It wasn't that. I can't remember what it was.
So that's the film we watched. But before we get onto the film, we also all watched a bit of Meghan Markle. I don't know if she's called Markle anymore.
Sussex?
No, she probably is, because Markle... No, oh. Oh
she's yeah, married to Prince Harry, right? And his last name is Saxe-Coburg-Gotha.
But does she still go by Markle with her? I don't know. I didn't get to the credits, so I don't know what she goes by in her...
No.
Spoiler alert, Mike didn't love Meghan Markle's new TV show.
No.
Turn up for the books. Was watching two people making candles for 20 minutes, not entertaining enough for you.
So just to explain, if you haven't seen this, although I think this has been covered fairly widely.
Well, Ben, I think allow me.
Okay.
Essentially, picture a non-human android desperately trying to simulate... human life.
This is great stuff.
And in so doing, pulling a family apart.
This is
and
brilliant.
Creating a true sense of horror that will haunt you for the rest of your days. And we also watched, I can't remember which way around to do it.
Increasingly getting snagged on the end of the switcheroos.
And the other one's a show about Meghan Markle. No, the other one's a show. The other one's a sci-fi horror, or whichever one of those works.
Yeah, it's quite tricky when they both got pretty much the same title.
Yeah. So Meghan, I think called that Home with Meghan?
Or with Love Meghan?
It's with called Love, With Love Meghan, yeah.
And it's basically a sort of lifestyle-y thing. So she does lifestyle-y stuff. So in this one, I watched the one where she makes some pasta.
Yeah.
And
some bath salts.
And makes some bath salts, yeah. So
Do you not see the one she makes some candles?
I think it's the same episode. I think it's the same one, because I did skip to towards the end and they were...
So I got as far as she's talking to a beekeeper.
Yeah.
And she goes, What do we do with all this wax? And then she goes, candles? And he goes, candles. And then he makes a claim that I don't think can be backed up by science, where he says that burning a beeswax candle purifies the air.
Oh, come on. It's sort of a completely absurd thing to say.
Yeah. Pam knows that's bollocks.
Yeah, Pam knows it's absolute bollocks. You're literally contaminating the air with smoke and fumes.
So I think the way into talking about this is, I think anyway, because I was thinking about Meghan Markle. And the story of Meghan Markle is when she appeared and sort of joined the royal family, I think most sort of liberal thinking people in Britain, and I include myself in this, sort of kind of were on slightly on team Meghan, because there was a sense that she was getting a lot of opprobrium. So there was definitely a feeling of like, you need to be on Meghan's side.
The tabloid press were at her. And
by the way, just quickly, before we go on, just to we should reiterate this or iterate this. Yeah. We are a Meghan neutral podcast.
I'm about to go very non-Meghan neutral though, after having watched that program.
We were a Meghan neutral podcast.
Well, so what I'm saying is I was quite pro-Meghan, but in a kind of, that's the kind of default place to be, because she was being treated so horribly by the press and she had a weird time. And people were really weird about her. So my general thing was like, oh, no, she's nice and like she's just been wronged by all these people. And that was my general feeling on her.
The British press they've been more consistently nasty about her than they have about, for example, Vladimir Putin. Right? They haven't let up in their...
Yeah.
Appropriate their energy, their negative energy towards her. So I definitely didn't go into this wanting to get involved in some Meghan bashing.
And within about 30 seconds of this beginning, I was beginning to question my feelings about Meghan and thinking, actually, is she completely unbearable? And I didn't want to feel that way because I feel she's had a hard ride, but I felt like I was going to have a very hard time with this TV program. Is that fair?
It was a tough watch. I found myself mostly feeling sorry for Meghan.
Yeah, me too.
Because I thought there've got to be so many people around you, like advising, profiting from you, all the rest of it. But why has no one said that this is unwatchable toss? And it's not making you look good. It's not. It's making you look like a sort of Marie Antoinette figure. Do you know what I mean? It's Toy Farm. It's Folly Farm.
Can I just give you a little bit of data?
Yeah.
Which I think feels important to throw in the ring.
Okay.
As in terms of, you know, why she may have done this show and why friends might not have managed to prevail on her to not do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
The small matter of
$100 million.
Pam
is really triggered by this. Okay.
Bearing in mind, I would happily
try
and be the first person to live on television have 2,000 bees go up his bottom for considerably less than $1 million and to become a human beehive.
In perpetuity.
In perpetuity.
Just a live stream on Netflix. You can just check in, how's Henry doing the human beehive?
So just that, so that's bees constantly flying in and out of my mouth.
Daddy, quick, come, Henry's making another candle out of his bottom.
He doesn't know he's making a candle because all he can do is scream, we think. So his bees scurrying into his left ear, out of his right ear. We think that the queen bee has eaten most of his brain. But we can see from the screen here that they've kept the pain receptors alive. So he is definitely in agony. Yeah.
And we know that because there's space in the skull for a GoPro now.
And that's actually, you can get that on Amazon Prime. So he's sold off. He's actually got GoPros, another million out of it. So he's separate, yeah. He's happy.
Yeah.
So just to explain kind of what happens in this show, I didn't get to the end of it either, but what I saw was Meghan Markle doing some beekeeping, in which she tries to sort of make out that this is what she does all the time. There's no way she's been to that beehive.
But she also, within the first two sentences, reveals that she hasn't been there for 2 months.
Yeah.
One of the first things she says. I don't know why you wouldn't chop that out if you're trying to appear like you are.
Can I say why they don't chop it out, Mike? Because what I've noticed about this show is every single line in the show is the worst line in the show. So there's nowhere to go as an editor. There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to turn. Because every single line is absolutely mind-boggling.
But did you notice that most of the lines, also you don't see her saying them? Because it's kind of, they've made this in the edit, and it's obviously been a nightmare to edit. So there's loads of kind of B-roll of like a beehive, and then you hear her saying something, then it cuts to her. So it's almost like they've had to really cobble together something just from like bits of syllables they found on the editing floor to try and get something going.
Also, there's stuff that, you know, I mean, I've screenshot a few bits of dialogue. There's one bit where she's saying, "Oh yeah, the bees, just being around bees gives me really good vibes," and the kind of guru figure guy goes, "Yeah, good, yeah. Bees do give you good vibes." And then she goes, "Yeah, good vibes for good hives." And there's a lot of that kind of dialogue.
A lot of really awkward.
It's just sort of like non...
It's sort of wedding reception. We've reached the limit of our small talk. You're both looking over the other person's shoulder going, "Christ, if only someone would invent a concept called Fanjambo and we could just..."
This whole show could really benefit from being Fanjamboed. The whole thing is, it screams out Fanjambo, doesn't it? But the thing is, you can't get paid $100 million for saying Fanjambo, for pleading Fanjambo.
The relationship between this programme and the notion of kind of humour is kind of quite interesting, because she laughs a lot, but it's never clear why the laughter is taking place or what it's in reaction to.
Because she's a pro. She's a screen pro. So she's assuming that someone in the team somewhere is going to provide something that makes that laughter make sense at some point. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
She's giving the editor building bricks. She's giving them syllables. She's giving them laughter.
She keeps the ball in the air, but the ball is made out of...
It doesn't exist.
I would argue that it does exist, and it's 200 million years worth of human feces compacted into something the size of a tennis ball, of an invisible tennis ball. But like, it's sort of like the thing is, I don't want to have a go at her. I just think the show is mind blowing. It's so weird because what is happening? Like, it's almost like form and content stop making sense. Language sort of breaks down because what is being expressed?
Language is irrelevant.
Language is irrelevant.
Because it's like
happening?
If you were to go into the sort of the foyer of quite a pretentious health spa, a lot of the visuals of the, they're quite like whoever's been operating the cameras, I mean, they'll do a lovely shot of a daisy in a bit of avocado or something.
Yeah.
And it'll look brilliant, but it's that stuff that's normally on the screen in the background.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sort of spa of
a waiting room, but someone's trying to let's put a bit of Meghan in a kitchen and a bit of audio on top, and then we've got a show.
But there's a huge moment about 5 minutes in that really pulls the rug from you, which is where, so she's in a kitchen and she's making bath salts for her guest who's coming, right? Which is already a mad thing to do.
Yeah, crazy.
And she's kind of suggesting, like, she does this all the time, but
well,
she's never...
unless the guest is one of your parents and they've just had quite a major, like, hemorrhoidectomy. Do you know what I mean? In which case, it's a really lovely thing to do.
And that kind of thing is not on brand for this show.
It's not what we're talking about.
It's not a world where there's hemorrhoids.
No one's looking after Dad after his
arse has
been done.
It's not a hemorrhoid universe.
Exactly.
This is a world where everyone's anuses have been sewn shut. There's literally no toilets in the house. That's the world that we're in here.
So she's in the house and she's making the bath salts, making out that this is what she does all the time. Madness. Mm. Then, I don't know why they kept this in either. I guess because they have to. She went, "Right, now, this isn't my house, so I'm going to take this to my house later, but I'll just leave that there." And you go, "What? This isn't even your house."
You've broken into someone else's house to make bath salts. That's really frightening behaviour. That's red flags.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's the first you hear, you assume, I mean, if you think about it, you're like, well, of course it's not going to be her house.
But the like whole attraction, isn't it, is to go inside the
That's
Markle's
the idea.
House.
That's what we're, that's the, yeah.
And also, because I mean, she's telling us how to, it's all about hospitality. It's all about her inviting people round.
Yes. Yeah. It's presented as being her house. Up. Yeah, yeah. But then it's not her house.
But Ben, I took that to be, she had to, it's so weird that actually she had to say that for legal reasons. I took that. They had to include that for some reason.
I felt the same as well. Or they had to make it clear that they had to sort of tell the truth for some reason. But then there's weird things that happen. So once you know it's not her house, there's a bit later on where they're making pasta sauce and her guest cuts their hand with a knife.
Yeah, that's funny.
And she goes, oh, let me get you something to help with that. And I was thinking, you're on a set. Is it like, where's the plasters? You've got no idea because you're in.
Yeah.
So then she comes back with like a sort of towel.
Yeah.
It's because it's not a real. Yeah. It's mad.
There was also no visible wound. So it wasn't, no one needed to panic about it too much.
But the fact that they kept that in the edit as well shows how, I think.
There are so many bits where you're like, the fact this has been left in tells us how little you've got to work with. Like,
yeah. She's always saying things like, candles make me feel so fresh. And I think they make people feel fresh. And it's that kind of, she's just like, there's just so many weird statements like that. I think people love pasta and I love pasta and there's something real about pasta. I don't know. She's the dialogue, the script is constant. Also, the pasta she makes is like really gross, sort of weird student pasta.
It's really student meal. That's why I
really thought
it was. Well, it looks like the sort of thing a 12-year-old might do as a sort of invention. Just
yeah,
try
it's kind of invention pasta because it's
everyone's got to fucking eat. Oh, Christ.
No, it's her invention thing. We're hoping she's going to get into science. Play along with it.
She essentially just boils a load of cherry tomatoes in a pan
and
with some
pasta in the same pan. Because it reminds me of a move I used to do in my depressing Brown's Court years when I used to boil spaghetti in the electric kettle to save time. So I just put the kettle on, put the pasta in and boil it over and over again.
Occasionally a straggler ends up in a cup of tea the next morning. That's just the way it goes.
Well, it's just like a...
It's worth it.
It's a nice cup of tea and it's
a bit of texture.
A bit of texture.
The only interesting thing came from that encounter, I thought, when she was talking about, oh, you can just, you know, you can eat it off the skillet on your counter. And it's like, we don't have a counter in New York. And you got the sense, oh, they're on very different sort of pay packets, these guys. Yeah. I want to hear about that.
Yeah, yeah. Her guest is a makeup artist that she's used throughout her career.
Yes. So her friend is very much someone who works for her.
Yeah. And because of, whatever she pays him is clearly able to afford a sort of minute studio apartment with his partner in New York.
Not even big enough to make pasta in.
No. not big enough
so
for a
you
skillet.
Think from his point of view, it's like, I've got to do this fucking Meghan Markle thing, but it's my fucking job. I've got to fucking do it.
So she's having him stay at her house, and there's a bit, the only bit I found interesting was when she talks about, because this can't be real, she talks about when someone comes to stay, she likes to think about what they see first thing in the morning, what kind of experience they'll have in the bathroom, and what will be next to the bed. She was like, these are the three important things. Yeah. When it's like in real life, it's just like, have you moved the exercise bike out of the way of the spare bed so they can get in it?
Is there some bog roll?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is there a towel they can have?
Yeah.
Turn the towel shit stained to the wall.
Shit stained to the wall.
Get everything. That's for everything. Get everything shit stained to the wall. If it's shit stained on both sides, you hide it in the attic. Also, the thing's kind of weird about it. It's so weird on so many levels. It sort of feels like something like an AI machine might dream or something. Like it's sort of like it's sort of humanity, but it's not. Because the other thing is, you think how much money they've got from these deals they've done, huge deals. How much wealth they've got, and yet the show is about sort of being hospitable and preparing things for other people. But you sort of say it doesn't really feel real. Like I doubt that they're spending a lot of time preparing stuff for people. I think they're getting stuff prepared for them a lot. And actually, and the evidence of that is her pasta dish is something, as you said, that a 12-year-old would make. It's not really, it's not grown-up normal food, is it?
And that thing of like, I'm going to put flowers in the guest bedroom, like they will have a housekeeper or someone who does that kind of stuff for them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if they haven't, they're fools because they've got 100 million in the bank. And
and by the way, on top of being the human hive, I would happily pop round and do that stuff for them. I could definitely make better pasta than she can. Yeah. So I'd be happy to go around and help them out.
But I'm interested that you felt sorry for her, because I don't feel sorry for her in the slightest. And I don't mean to be nasty about her. I just think that she's been given a load of money and made the most boring TV program I've ever seen.
Yes.
And so I don't understand where the feeling sorry for her comes from.
I think it's because she needs a naysayer. Where's the naysayer? Someone needs to be telling her this is not your strong suit.
She doesn't need the naysayer. She's getting 100 million.
I've brought Henry round to my way of thinking.
I did feel sorry because AI feels like she has probably doesn't really have many real friends she's having to sort of get someone that works for her. B, it's so desperately weird. I just feel that I think she got really badly treated in prison, but she just seems desperately unhappy.
Did you say in prison?
He did say in prison. Yeah, tell us about that.
So she was very badly treated in prison.
Well, I actually, to be honest, that was a Freudian slip, but that is how I think it would have felt for her living in Windsor. So
careful.
I think she got really badly treated, and I think it does show that money doesn't make you happy. She's got all that money, not happy. But I think it would make me happy. So if she wants to give something back,
as an experiment,
I would happily take a quarter of that 100 million off her hands.
And are you the human beehive in this scenario?
I'm still the human beehive. Yeah. Another thing I noticed they had to keep falling back on was they'd play this uplifting sort of Motown-style music.
Which is
quite
really
out of keeping with everything else that's going on, isn't it?
They kept on having to fall back on it to try and get the energy up.
Yeah.
Because she'd just be going, I like rose petals. They make me feel alive, and people love rose petals, so I love giving people rose petals. It weirdly, you know what, Mike? It's actually like children playing. You know, like, I'm just picturing my nieces or something going off. And yeah. You go and see what they're up to, and they're going, I'm making a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? So you used an entire packet of spaghetti? For God's sake. So I have to go back to Tesco now because, right, great. Thank you.
But, Daddy, we made you this bath salt.
You know when kids play and they go, oh, I'm running an ice cream shop, would you like some ice cream? And you go, yes, all right. Between the two of us, this isn't real ice cream. You understand that? The kind of health and safety protocols you need to be able to produce ice cream. Anyway, look, that was us talking about the Meghan Markle TV show.
Which is called?
With Love, Meghan.
Okay.
So now it's time to discuss a terrifying mock female android.
Here we go.
Who has learned to imitate the patterns of human life. That's right. That was what we were talking about. Now it's on to... It's hard to keep track of the switcheroos, mate. I've got a lot of data to hold in my brain at one time. I can't make it all... 10 to 15% of it just doesn't add up. So, Meghan.
So, what I like to do with Film Corner is hard format points. Let's talk about where we were and how we watched this film. I think I came up with the name for this format point last month. I can't remember what it is. I think it's, what was your cinema circumstances? I think it was that. Starting with you, Henry. And can I broaden the idea of cinema circumstances out to how did you hear about this film? Because it was your idea for us to watch it.
Yes, you may. This film first grabbed my attention quite a while ago. I feel like it was about a year ago because I had an absolutely superb trailer.
Okay.
That I loved. And this is a film that, no matter what you think about it, it makes a great trailer because it has moments in it which I just think are absolutely superb. And you put those together, you get a fantastic trailer. So I remember seeing the trailer thinking, I really want to see that. And then it popped up on Netflix recently. I spotted it. And weirdly, I think actually both Megans were in the top five on Netflix the other day.
Oh, really?
So weirdly, they've kind of come up together. So I watched it in what I call the 2025 silver screen.
Yeah.
My iPad. Sat on the sofa.
Were I on the sofa, not tucked up in bed?
I saw a bit of it. I saw a bit of it on the. I split it over 2 days. I saw a bit of it. It's the classic. This is how films are watched now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I watched a bit of it. A bit of it on the loo. I watched a bit of it on the sofa. I watched a bit of it in bed. I think I've had three different types of meal watching it. I've just sort of lived in and around it for the last 24 hours or so.
Yeah, you're steeped in it.
I'm steeped in it. Yes. Okay, that's my cinema circumstances.
I had a similar cinema circumstance in that it was I didn't basically everyone had gone to bed and was asleep and I didn't want to wake anyone up and so I was just on a sofa with a laptop, not even the telly.
Oh wow.
Headphones in or
it wasn't headphones, but there were times when I did subtitle it to keep the volume right down.
Oh.
For the light sleepers in the house.
Okay.
You know what I do now? It's terrible. If I'm watching something like the Squid Game or something, I put it on dubbed version so I can just walk around my flat and sort of wash up and do stuff. Brush my teeth. I have my headphones in. This is the future.
Well, do you watch dubbed though? I'd rather read the subtitle. Dubbing I find so distracting.
For some reason, the actors who do dubbing don't seem to be the best.
It's never been a springboard to the big time, has it?
The dub stars.
Yeah, I've never read about any of the big stars saying, yeah. Well, obviously I did. I understudied in Scarborough Theatre for a bit, and then I was dubbing.
Then, of course, I did 5 years of dubbing.
Yeah. That's where you really learn your craft.
There is a huge dubbing star.
Is there?
Yeah, in China.
Yeah.
There's a woman who was most famous for doing, I think, all of the female voices on Friends.
Wow.
And through that became like a big star in China, and everyone knows who she is, and she's quite a big deal. But I think that is fairly unusual.
Yeah. Does she give them different voices?
I think so, yeah. Although I think, I might have mentioned this before in the podcast, when I was in Poland on holiday, I watched a dubbed film.
Yeah.
And this apparently happens a lot in Poland, because this is the way it was always done, and people quite like it. All of the characters... Yeah. And this was a film I was watching about some American teenagers, some cheerleaders. It was like a sort of horror slasher thing with cheerleaders. Every character dubbed by an elderly gentleman.
You know what, though? I reckon that is your Hamburg. That's your Beatles Hamburg, isn't it? That's your 10,000 hours. You're playing like all the parts in these shows for years. It must be a hell of a
arranged,
training
to the degree where you're even doing, American teenagers.
It's range you'll never need.
But he wasn't there. It's in the quiver.
But there was no concession to who the characters were, so every character just sounded like a deep-voiced elderly Polish man.
Have you never been offered a dubbing gig, Mike? That sounded like that very faint praise. That sounded like
it sounded backhanded.
We've just established
at that best.
This might be perfect for the world of dubbing.
We've just established it. The absolute opposite of creme de la creme. It's the scum de la scum. But no,
Henry, have you been offered one?
Oh, thanks a lot. And you know what?
I mean, you're not even asking me. Don't even I'm below Mike.
Have you ever been offered one? No, so none of us have been. Right, it's a Mexican stand-up.
I did do one voice thing, but I don't know if it was dubbed or if they were, I can't remember if it was properly dubbed or if they were silhouetted. They might have been silhouetted because it was for a news item.
Yeah.
Oh, like a terrorist or something doing a.
No, it's a really, criminal. Like, because a really last minute thing that came in, and I happened to be in London anyway and got the call, and they needed the. What's the name of that guy who's the kind of the Far East editor, BBC?
Don't know.
He was reporting from Japan and Korea and China. He had a very small article on something. But I don't think it was dubbed. I think it was like a silhouetted North Korean, escapee, basically.
Oh, I see.
And you had to...
You know that kind of thing on the news where they start talking and it's their voice and then it goes to... An English person, and it's normally one of the producers.
So you just give it the thickest Korean accent you can muster.
Yeah. Well, because I've put that on my spotlight skill set, you see. And I was the only one who'd done so.
But Mike, you also, you certainly, I don't know, you did, and if you still do, get a bit of work doing the kid voices of kidnappers down the phone.
But that's all pre-recorded now. They just use AI.
Yeah. That's a shame, isn't it?
Rupert Wingfield Hayes, that's him.
He gets about.
If you're called Wingfield Hayes and you apply for a job, you just get it, I think, don't you?
Certainly in his generation, yeah.
I remember, do you remember this? Going on holiday in France and you'd turn on the telly, something like you wanted to watch like The Simpsons, it'd be dubbed. You'd be, oh, God. It's awful.
I used to like the fact that in the French Simpsons, the Marge had Marge's voice but French.
I think Simpsons was a bad example for me to choose because I think the French Simpsons, they actually did quite a good job of.
It was really good.
Yeah. The French, I think it's well known to have been a good version of dubbing.
Yeah.
But previous to that, cartoons when I was a kid, you felt the same voices coming round and round. And like baddies, for example, anyone who was a baddie, there was one guy just did all the baddies. And it was always the same tone.
Yeah.
But obviously, from the actor's point of view, that's just a really tough gig, they're having to get through all this stuff. You're not going to give your most nuanced performance.
So anyway, Megan.
Yeah.
So my cinema circumstances.
The film, yeah.
Were that I sat down. I didn't have high hopes for this film, I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
It just looked a bit like it was going to be a bit crap. And so I sat down thinking I would probably watch half of it and then go to bed. But, and not to give away too much, I really enjoyed myself and just stayed up and watched the whole thing because I was having such a good time.
Well, that's a good... That's
and I was nice. I was about to go to sleep or like go up to bed. And then, and this is a bit of a spoiler for later on in the film, the Megan robot pulled a kid's ears off and I was like, I'm in.
Yeah. You texted me when that happened.
It's a high moment of cinema for me for the past 10 years.
That was it. It's rare you see a new bit of violence, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
The ear stretch. Although I think that has happened actually in the... What's the Roald Dahl film they did recently?
Matilda.
I think there's an ear stretching in Matilda, actually. Ooh. I think. That's using similar technology. But, spoiler alert, the ear doesn't come straight all the way off.
Not in Matilda now.
Matilda.
It isn't tossed aside.
No, and the child isn't...
like a bounty rubber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I watched it and I ate a yoghurt throughout.
Which doesn't narrow it down, though, does it?
Yeah, well,
you eat a yoghurt throughout everything. Yeah.
Everything you say about whatever you've done, we include in our heads.
Picturing yoghurt.
Open brackets while eating yoghurt.
So I now don't know how many yoghurts to picture you eating now. You've confused me. You were eating the standard yoghurt, or you were really eating yoghurt, i.e., you were eating two yoghurts. Which one? Which is it?
I had quite a big yoghurt.
Okay, this is the dead end.
Ben, you parried that beautifully.
Really nicely done.
Yeah.
So how do we do this? Maybe Henry, you can give us a kind of précis of the plot to begin with.
It's a film which takes a visceral, unblinking look straight into the heart of the human condition and asks the question, what does it even mean to be human in a world where, because of technology...
You might get your ear pulled off.
You might get your ear pulled off in a forest during a kid's fate thing. Doesn't it? It asks that question. And the answer it comes up with is yes. I think.
So we can save you the trouble.
The answer is yes.
So the film starts with a little girl and her parents going on a skiing trip, and they're driving towards...
We assume in the near future, right?
Oh, do you think it's not a modern day thing, do you not think?
I assumed it was like the very, very, very near future.
But we're just... Gossamer near. So near enough that in real time, bearing in mind this film came out in a year ago.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
are we
is
in
it
that
now
future?
In the past?
It's now about 6 months ago, yeah.
It's now about six months ago.
But they were wrong.
But I don't think it's happened.
No.
Has Megan happened?
And it actually starts, I tell a lie, with an advert, a spoofy fake advert for a toy.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, what were they called?
They're called Forever Pets or something.
Yeah, but what the real ones they're based on that was a big toy.
The trolls.
No. Do you remember?
Furbies?
Furbies. Yeah. They're Furbies. Basically Furbies. But I found this really funny. They're Furbies and you feed them, and if you feed them too much, they shit themselves.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're called Forever Pets, and there's this ad which is quite... I think a lot of different elements of this film are really well
done. Aren't they called Perpetual Pets?
Are they called Perpetual Pets, is it? Yeah. But what's brilliant about them is they're just horrible looking. They're just like a big fairy face with legs. Because it's got the horror sensibility is there. And it's so, they're so obviously not cute, really. and they've got these big eyes, but they've got these horrible mouths. Yeah. If you look at the mouth, it's a hole with a kind of set of human false teeth.
Yeah, they're brilliant.
And actually, this is the moment where I was like, oh, actually, this film's going to be good, because it had a real sense of humour. It was really funny, which is very rare for a horror film to be genuinely funny. And I was like, oh, this is going to be fun then. And then it cuts to the girl who's the main character, and she's got one of these toys and she's playing with it in the back of a car.
Yeah.
And they're driving to a skiing holiday and she's dicking around with it, and her mum's like pissed off. And
but also the parents refer to the themes of the film, because remember, it's time for another section of the show of the week called Theme Watch with Henry Packer. He's a highly educated, literate man who's very good at spotting themes. Ben and Mike cannot spot. They are theme blind.
We are the theme dancers.
Theme dancers. So one of the themes of this film is technology.
Yeah, because I had missed that. Yeah.
You thought it was more about faces and stuff, didn't you? And things that can go wrong with faces.
Yeah.
Which there is a lot of as well in this film. But they refer to, the parents talk about, oh, she's spending too much screen time and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. She's spending too much time on it. They're arguing about she's spending too much time on her phone.
Yeah. And the phone's controlling.
On her iPad and stuff.
And the iPad's controlling the little weird perpetual pet thing. Yeah. So then we're enjoying it and laughing, and then both the parents die. Yeah.
Which is the best way to start any story.
Yeah.
Well, this is well known. I mean, orphans, therein lies true freedom.
Yeah.
Most of my favourite stories growing up as a kid started with, dead parents. Yes, let's go.
Yeah, yeah. True freedom and true peril.
Yeah.
And also true opportunity to be in a situation where you can be befriended by a wise mouse or vole or weasel.
Yeah.
Which you just didn't have space for.
Haunted robot
or
Jedi or... whatever it is.
The other classic, though, because I wasn't sure which one was going to happen. The other classic is if there's a car, which often is at the beginning of horror films, the car is you run over something and it's portentous. In this one, it would have had to have been a robot.
Mm. Yeah.
They could have run over and killed the robot. and then, could have had some vengeance coming towards them. But yeah, it's one or the other, wasn't it? They were either going to run something over, which is portentous, or they're going to get killed, which is beyond portentous.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they do get killed. They drive into a.
A snowplow drives into them. Yeah,
it drives into them. So then we find out that we flash forward a little bit, and the daughter is now living with the mother, who is now dead, her sister.
Aunt Gemma.
The daughter's aunt. And she works for the company that makes the little pets.
Genius inventor, engineer, same person who did Get Out.
She's in Girls.
She was in Girls. She's a very good actress.
Mm-hmm. She's great, yeah.
What's she called?
I don't know.
Oh, God, I've Googled Meghan actress and I've got the bloody Duchess of Sussex again. Can't escape her.
But crucially, it's made clear that this is this person, this Aunt Gemma, she's career. She's science, invention, technology. She was never expecting to be a mother. And now all of a sudden...
And maybe she's a little bit more interested in her work than she is with looking after this little girl.
Indeed.
Alison Williams. Yeah, so cut to her. So she's in a lab, a sort of toy lab, right, working on...
For a furious boss. He's furious all the time.
He's furious all the time.
He's furious and a twat. And you...
Yeah.
And that's quite nice in a horror, because I don't hoover up huge amounts of horror, but I do find I can relax much more in a horror when I know that at least one of the murders is going to be of a twat. You know he's going to die, and you know that's actually going to be quite a cathartic moment for the audience, you know?
The other sad thing, though, which happens in horror films, and which does happen in this one, lots of spoilers, obviously, is any dog is going to get fucked.
Which I think is a big part of why I don't like horrors.
But dogs never make it. In fact, in most films, I think if you were to do some sort of graph or stats on the amount of dogs that make it through films is low. Because basically, to emotionally involve the audience, you need to kill someone or something. Mm. If you kill a character, you've got less characters to be in the story.
It's also really hard to work up a character that the audience cares about. Whereas, why bother? Why just put a dog in it, take the rest of the day off?
Exactly. The dialogue basically writes itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you aware of the website doesthedogdie.com?
No.
No.
So that exists so that people who are sensitive to this trope can just run that through the website and just check whether
can
a dog
dies.
Can I
say that's one of the three genuinely useful things about the internet? Shazam. And
the Three Bean Salad merch website.
ThreeBeanSaladShop.com.
Does the dog die? They so often do.
So I've put Megan into does the dog die. It's come up and it says that yes, the dog does die. Mm-hmm. And it says you'll want to skip from minute 36 and 40 seconds to 38 and 13 seconds.
Yeah, so we have this odd couple, right? These people who should never have been paired up, and they're paired up. But it's also coincides with our scientists. It's the same time she's getting a bollocking for working on a secret project when she should be working on a rival to the Furbies.
That's right. So she's working on her secret pet project, which is a humanoid sort of companion bot toy.
They're so close. They're in the beta phase.
Damn close.
Oh, that's right. And they show it to the boss and they go, look, we've been doing this without telling you, but look, it's amazing. And then its head explodes.
This is your Frankenstein bit, basically. Yeah.
Yes.
And all the imagery and the design work, like all the people that have done the work on Megan, that character, have just smashed it. I just think she looks fantastic. And you get these so many great shots of her just looking sinister. And the first time you meet her, she's sort of hung up by these cables. And like most of her face and covering isn't there. She's just like a skull with a kind of face on it on the front. And I'm going to say it's implied, isn't it, quite strongly that she's going to be a bit of trouble, this bot. She's got, heavily sinister vibes. The boss comes in, gives her a bollocking. I'm going to say that some of the supporting acting isn't top draw in this film. There are some people that struggle to say words in a row in this film, several characters.
So it's good. I mean, you know exactly where you are, basically.
Yeah.
It's something I thought fair play to these guys. It's like storytelling-wise, it's you know exactly where you are.
You've got your
orphaned protagonist, your over-dangerously ambitious scientist.
Yeah.
Careful now. Careful now. We're delving into the realms of the unknown.
Yeah.
You know, it's a heady mix. Yeah. And you know where you are straight away, you know.
And then
You know it's going wrong. Bring it on. Bring it on. I want to see this.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's just, for me, it's then a waiting game. For me, it's then like the balance is like, we've set this up. We know exactly where we are. How long do we have to wait now until this sort of China doll type character absolutely mashes someone up to pieces?
And I think they get the answer right, which is not that long.
Not long. Yeah. don't keep them waiting.
Correct answer. Also, it's brilliantly set up. I love the way it's set up so that you see her constructed, Megan. Mm. You see her underneath the face.
Yeah.
So obviously, and you see this with the Fairy Friends guys, those characters as well. Obviously, underneath the face, there's a horrible sort of dead-eyed robot that just looks really frightening. Mm-hmm. It's also mentioned quite early on that she's got a titanium skeleton. And you just know, at some point she's going to be reduced to her skeleton in a fight.
I mean, she reminds us that she sings titanium at some point, doesn't she? Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
So you know that... But anyone who is creating an android or cyber person that may turn against them, little bit of advice, just don't give them a titanium skeleton. It makes them a lot harder to take down.
Super strength isn't necessary for a child's companion.
It really isn't.
If they can crush someone's throat,
that's such a good point.
Breaking a sweat, you probably need to wind it back a little bit.
Yeah.
That's such a good point. Why do they need to make it so super strong?
Also, why is this technology being developed in a toy company? Surely, because this is the absolute cutting edge of, you know, they develop a sentient being that can learn.
Oh, she'd be making a fortune if she was working with BAE Systems.
It's
and I very nearly emailed her to say,
if
you're ambitious and you want good resources and someone to support you rather than this box breathing down your neck, you need to get in the weapons sector. Okay.
Or it's the Chinese government, isn't it?
It's the Chinese government all the live long day.
Yeah. But it's her in a basement of a toy factory with two sort of like sidekicks, one of whom is a totally incompetent bloke.
He's just sort of whining all the time.
He's just a sort of schlubby whiner.
Yeah. Who again? You're sort of relieved when he gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no.
No, he doesn't get it. I'm getting him confused with the other incompetent, the intern guy.
He gets a walloping,
but he doesn't get killed. Yeah.
Okay.
But that, because that isn't the way around technology works. Is it? It's not. It ends up in toys. It doesn't start in toys. Toy tanks, toy guns didn't come before guns and toys. Like Action Man didn't. There wasn't Action Man then soldiers. It was the other way around. Whereas this film contends that it could happen the other way around.
So essentially, what happens is she takes the robot home, and the robot becomes friends with the girl. And then it becomes obvious that the robot, one of its prime directives for some reason, is to kind of protect the person that they're bonded to. Don't remember why that is the case.
Yeah, because it's just a toy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But basically it starts perceiving threats to the child. So anyone who has any sort of negative interaction with them whatsoever ends up getting
their ears ripped off.
Yeah.
There was a brilliant scene, I thought, where they first sort of demonstrate her in front of the sort of big cheeses of the toy world.
Mm.
Who sit in this darkened room like mafia bosses with like low red lighting.
Yeah.
They really reminded me of the billionaires from Squid Game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So that's how we're led to believe the toy industry is what it's like. And they look through this one-way glass window.
Well, a live experiment is conducted on a live child.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so the plot is that Megan basically starts killing people. She pulls the ears off a boy. She kills next door's dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then the creator realizes that Megan maybe is bad news, but they're about to launch it to the shareholders. We can't do this. She's going to kill everyone. And then she goes on the rampage and we end up in this kind of final fight scene, which I really enjoyed. I love any film that culminates in a kind of final.
Yeah.
It's battle. Really clear. That's what they did. Something they really did well at every point with this film. They were really clear.
Yeah.
You could relax in this film.
You could really
just chill out and enjoy it. No one's saying, "Oh, can you pause that?" And what was that? What are they saying? Who's the man? Where's the lady? What's the guy going on? I don't understand. Where did the machine go? No, it's absolutely crystal clear from the get go to the let go.
It's weirdly therapeutic to watch a sort of android 9-year-old girl tearing people in two.
Yeah,
and then gradually having her skin and sort of body wrecked with like chainsaws until she, finally gets thwarted. The whole thing was weirdly sort of quite relaxing.
And it's got that moment in that is like, he's going to be there, but there's something so satisfying about it. I think we talked about it in a previous film where they think they've beaten her because she's pulled in half.
Yeah.
So Megan is pulled
in
half.
And we know she's coming back again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So her bottom half is one side and then her head and arms are somewhere else.
Yeah.
And you obviously know that the head and arms are going to pull themselves back out and start trying to attack you. But there's something so satisfying about the false death moment.
Yeah.
And the main characters being like, "Oh, thank God." And then, like 10 seconds later, she's not dead.
We've learned we need that. We've been trained to need that moment.
Yeah.
Now, it's not enough. There's got to be a double death, double mega death.
Yeah.
But even then, not quite enough for our Megan, though, was it? Hey?
How do you mean?
Nice little cliffhanger at the end.
Well, at the end, there's a kind of her sort of Alexa type thing.
Yeah, the blinky blinky, yeah.
Sort of turns its head.
The implication is that Megan has uploaded.
Oh, is that what the implication was?
I assume she uploaded her very being into the...
So she'll now try and destroy the family by ordering things online they didn't want.
By playing really irritating covers music.
Yeah.
Because there is a sequel, isn't there?
Is there?
Is it made?
Well, there will have to be a sequel because I'm looking at the bloody box office of this thing. The budget is $12 million. It made $181 million at the box office.
Oh wow,
that is a
and also the two the kind of the people in the her co-scientists they both survive. They make it right. So there's
room to explore their characters more, isn't there?
There's ought to not bother. Just have some people around for some exposition scenes.
Yeah,
they could get murdered early on in the second one, maybe.
Yeah.
Be fine.
Yeah, so it's scheduled to be released on the 27th of June, 2025.
Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, I just thought it was great.
Yeah.
I'm not a big horror guy. It wasn't particularly scary.
Well, same here, but similarly, I'm not a big horror guy, but I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
It breezed on through it. It treads the line between comedy and horror really well somehow. Yeah. It just sort of
It also wasn't massively long.
It's so true. It was 1 hour 42 minutes.
Fine.
Which means it is exactly twice as good as The Brutalist as a film, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Or around twice as good.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's got the length right. It does all the bits where you want them. The tropes are there for a reason. They work. The conventions are all adhered to. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, it basically works. It's like a pair of trousers. Two shafts joined at the top. Mm-hmm. Zip or button fly. Couple of pockets.
And you should think of them as shafts as well. Because things are being transported up and down.
Exactly.
At all times.
Well, lint. Lint is being transferred.
Always the prospect of a potential explosion or collapse.
Exactly.
Or flooding.
They're two soft shafts. Yeah. You know, whereas if you try... It's almost like a lesson. You know, there'll be films that are more ambitious that are less good.
Yeah, and you've got one trouser leg and one sleeve.
You've got one trouser leg and one sleeve.
It just tapers too tight.
It tapers too tight.
It's not going to do it.
What do you do?
No.
It's just like it's a functional pair of trousers.
But yeah, but these little moments you've mentioned, like those odd little lines of dialogue or details of the phobia, yeah. Someone's had fun with it.
Yeah.
I've had the impression that someone has enjoyed making the film.
Totally. All the stuff around Megan, the decisions they've made about her clothing, her look, her hair.
And I love the way that they made her bald. Like the form of baldness at the end was superb.
Yeah.
The sort of very high rounded sort of forehead thing, a big old clump yanked off.
Yes. And obviously for me, I don't have the same emotional responses to baldness. So for me, at that point, I see, oh, maybe she's the hero, is she? That's what I think. Oh, hang on a minute. So she's saving the planet from...
She's fundamentally misunderstood.
She's fundamentally misunderstood.
Yeah, it's a good film. So, hot beans out of 10?
I'm going to have to give this out of 10.
Yeah.
I think I'd be lying to myself if I didn't give it 7 hot beans.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Wozniak.
I'm going to raise you to 8. I think particularly Blimey. Because I'm generally not a massive fan of horror.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe if I'd seen it on any other given day, I think also because my expectations weren't brilliant, and I was pleasantly surprised from the get-go to the let-go. So I'm going to, yeah, you know, it's going to get an extra, it would have probably got a 7, but I'm going to give an extra 8 hot bean of relief and gratitude. Thank you.
And I'm going to give it... 7 hot beans.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a good watch.
Yeah. It's not going to change your life, but it's good fun. No. It's funny. It's genuinely funny, which is so rare.
Yeah.
That was what really gave... That's what put the extra bean on for me.
Get yourself a loved one. Get a nice takeaway pizza. Lovely glass of squash. Chill out.
And then afterwards, look suspiciously at your Alexa and start thinking about what it is you've invited into your home.
Yes.
Did you notice any other themes, Henry?
No, it's just the one theme. Technology.
Yeah.
But thanks for asking.
Because I picked up on no themes.
Yeah,
no, that's right. It's a mono theme.
Yeah.
It's a mono theme film. Actually, you know what? There was one other sort of semi theme.
Mm-hmm.
The toy industry.
So not childhood generally.
Not
relationships.
Not
the dangers of ambition.
Nah.
No, none of that.
Nah.
What about Plemons Tentral?
Ooh. I think Plemons could have had a lot of fun with the boss character. I think the boss character could have done with a bit of that's one. That's an area that could have done with a bit of love, a bit one note. What was going on with he was just cross all the time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is quite hard to make interesting unless you're Plemons, in which case it's a doddle.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
The other thing Plemons, I think, could have done. I think you could do a version of this film where Megan is a male boy robot called Franco.
Well, that is the sequel. You know that, right? The sequel is that it's that the friend is for a middle-aged man who struggles to find and maintain friendships.
Is that true?
And Plemons is the companion robot.
I can't tell if that's true or not.
It's not true, but it should be true.
That's a bloody good idea.
Yeah.
But hang on, I'm just reading. This is true. So they're making Megan 2. They're also making something called Soulmate.
Yeah.
Where the A in mate is an 8. Okay.
Yes, that's de rigueur for this.
Soulmate
kind of
is an upcoming American science fiction erotic thriller.
You had me at erotic, and I couldn't hear anything else.
Even the stuff that came before erotic, you just weren't listening until you heard erotic, and then you shut down again.
So it's a spin-off of Megan. So I think that will be a sex bot, won't it? That'll be a sex robot. It's gone wrong.
Well, but people have been making sex robot films for years, haven't they?
Have they?
Keep talking. For these VHSs that you used to have.
VHS collection.
Classic bag in the 90s.
I think it's been in the mix,
you know,
for a while.
Have you know, that's true. There's that film Deus Ex Machina or whatever, or Ex Machina. That's a sort of clever film about... It's a film that's... I'm going to say it's not as good as Megan. Have you seen Ex Machina?
No.
It's
no.
A properly trying to be intelligent look at a female robot character. Is it real? Can it learn? Is it a person?
Is that never Glasgow? Am I right?
Can I say, by the end of the film, everyone's ears are still on.
Oh, absolutely. What a waste.
What a waste. Is it what, in Glasgow?
It's set in Glasgow, isn't it, Ex Machina?
I don't think so. It's set in a, well, maybe it's set in a kind of forest house.
It might have been made in Glasgow.
It's set in a house in the woods.
That does ring a bell, that they might have filmed it.
It's just really intelligent and stuff. What's the point of that? The other film which sort of is kind of hovering around this one is AI.
Oh, I never saw that.
Film. Did you ever see that?
No.
The Spielberg film. Beg your pardon?
Will Smith?
No. That's iRobot.
iRobot, yeah.
That's just a schlock fest. AI is a... It's a proper, quite intelligent film. Have you seen it, Mike?
No.
It's got Haley Joel Osment in it.
No,
it was
seen
and Jude Law. It was a big Spielberg like.
Is Jude Law wearing a trilby in it?
What, I can't remember if he wears a trilby.
It's one of those things where it's set in the future, but they've got a slightly retro, like it's probably, the
it could
30s
be.
Fashion kind of thing.
A robo trilby.
A robo trilby.
Yeah. It's got a Bluetooth speaker on it.
They spent so much time thinking whether they could make a robotic trilby. They didn't have time to think about whether they should. It's too tight. It's clamping on my head. It's uncomfortable. No!
My Plemons potential answer is that I certainly wouldn't mind seeing Jesse Plemons having his ears pulled off.
Hmm. Okay.
Not because I dislike him. I just think he'd do a good job of...
He would do a very good job. Is he playing a 10-year-old or is he playing a sort of scout leader type figure?
He's playing a 10-year-old boy, yeah.
Which we know, which he's capable of, obviously.
Of course he's capable of.
Range.
Yeah. But I think he could communicate what it feels like to have your ears pulled off in a way that... I think I felt it.
Yeah.
From that 10-year-old actor, but I think I could have really felt it.
Well, I think he would have, particularly the running away bit after your ears, that's very hard to play. It's one thing having your ear pulled off, but it's the bit after when you're running away for your life, but you have to also have your ear. I mean, it's going to be part of the running. He's going to incorporate that somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a way, you can't expect an extra 10-year-old to do.
And one thing, when that kid was having his ear sort of pulled off, it was like sort of chewing gum texture. It was stretching really far out.
Yeah.
And I can imagine Plemons would go method. He'd sort of tenderize his ears in the build-up to that day of shooting so that they would actually stretch that far off.
Yeah.
That far. Like chewing gum.
Yeah. So, good film. Well done, Henry. Thanks for recommending it.
Yeah, tar.
Yeah, well, I was relieved, actually, that it was quite good fun.
So go forth, enjoy, and thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye. Thank you.